Welcome to my podcast, Esteemed Women. It used to be called Silence, and then it became Innovation. And finally, now women are more empowered than ever to use their voices to express what it's really like to strive and thrive in what often tends to be a very imbalanced and unequal world. I'm sure it hasn't been easy, but these women have really achieved and accomplished. They truly are esteemed women who have chosen careers in science, technology, and innovation. They are typically go-getters, alpha females, hardworking, and maybe even just a little bit perfectionistic. But on the whole, they've applied their talents and skills to really make a difference. That was certainly my own intention when working as a mechanical engineer. In these episodes, you'll get a chance to hear about some fascinating innovations, but you're also likely to be inspired and uplifted by the personal stories and experiences of my amazing guests. So let's hear it from my incredibly esteemed STEM sister, Yulia Getachew.
So my name is Yulia Getachew. I'm 24 years old. I have just finished studying aerospace engineering at Brunel University. I finished my third year, and I'm currently on an internship, a summer internship at Kane International.
Brunel University, put it there. Oh my gosh, I did not realize they offered aerospace engineering as like a standalone degree.
Yes, I don't know if it's a new thing that they have, but yeah, they have specifically aerospace engineering cohort. And to begin with, there were around 70 plus students. So it is quite a popular course.
Because I know that in my day, they had aerospace engineering at Cranfield. And so all the aerospace engineers wanted to go to Cranfield because they've got like runways and actual planes and things like that. How was it studying at Brunel?
My goodness, it has been a roller coaster. It's definitely been a journey because, of course, for my first and second year, I started in 2020, which was at the beginning of pandemic. So both first and second year was done online. I didn't have any interaction or face-to-face interaction with my peers and my lecturers, apart from emails and WhatsApp group chats and messages, of course. So it was interesting in a sense that I had to do it all by myself, which had its pros and cons. And it was challenging at times to get my head around, you know, this new topic of engineering, specifically aerospace. However, in my third year, I moved onto campus and I really got to have more hands-on experience with different challenges, like the iMechi challenges, for example, where we got to build, you know, line launchers and specific robots that do different tasks. And I think aerospace engineering really delves into different, you know, elements and aspects. You get to use simulation softwares like CFD, and you conduct a project on that. You can also do more solid mechanics stuff. So it varies, which I find to be very interesting.
So there is a serious deficit of women in engineering. Yeah. And I'm assuming you identify as a woman.
Of course.
And got to ask these days. And why did you choose aerospace engineering or even just engineering?
I think for me, that would go back to my mother. Because I wasn't born in the UK. I was actually born in Ethiopia. And when I was at the age of six, my mom decided to leave Ethiopia because she realized that, especially as a girl, you know, studying engineering or any kind of STEM in Ethiopia, she knew my future in terms of my education wouldn't be as bright. It's not very common for a lot of girls to graduate studying engineering and then to become successful in that career going forward in Ethiopia. So she decided to come to the UK at the age of six, and she brought my brother and I here. Even coming here, you know, I didn't know any English. I struggled at school. My parents didn't really understand the education system at school as well. So I didn't have mentoring. I attended both primary and secondary schools in disadvantaged areas, which really set me back to an extent where I experienced failures and whatnot. And I think all of that perseverance and push drove a sense of desire to really achieve what my mother fled Ethiopia to give me. just to achieve that future that she gave me. So I knew I wanted to be a scientist. I saw a lack in it. I couldn't identify or find representations in the field of engineering, specifically space science, what I was interested in. You know, back then there was hardly any women, especially Black women or people of color, you know, a few years ago. So I think that really drove a hunger in me to just push and to be almost a pioneer, like to pave the way, to really even inspire the next generation after me. I just wanted to achieve something so great in the field of science, space science, which later led to me studying aerospace engineering.
Amazing. But, yeah. That's such an inspirational story, and I probably don't even know even a single digit percentage of what you've been through, but wow, like to come to a country at the age of 6 not knowing how to speak the language, getting into a system which was alien to you, all the while pursuing a dream to be in STEM. I mean, your mum sounds visionary.
She's like the strongest person I know. That's me summarizing the story for you. Because when she came to this country, she was here. She left us for 1 year. We were back home with my dad. So she was quite young as well when she had us. So she sacrificed her childhood and her youth just to give us the future. So she has really persevered, which is also why, like I said, it stirred this hunger in me, this drive to really achieve the future that she sacrificed to give me. Yeah,
it's amazing how much our parents drive us. And you know, that sounds like such an obvious statement, but honestly, like, even at my age, I am still so driven by my parents, particularly my dad's dream. And I wonder how common that is amongst minorities, because we kind of, you know, when we are transplanted, whichever form that comes in, sometimes we only know our parents as like a fixed point. Do you ever like think about that?
When you say fixed point, as in people that we just look up to, where it's quite limited?
Like fixed point, as in like in my own personal experience, my parents really didn't fit into the community we lived in. And so they became fixed points for me because I always went home to them, you know. And even though we didn't fit in the community, like we didn't look like any of our community, and we didn't sound like our community and didn't do things that the community did, as, you know, Malaysian, Sri Lankan, Buddhist family. Like, it just, what felt familiar was just this little unit we had. And therefore, my parents' vision for me became like my main motivator.
Yeah. Definitely.
It seems like such a kind of common theme amongst minorities.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, like, even in my personal journey, when I came to this country, I didn't have any extended family here. It was literally my parents and my younger brother. So, you know, and any qualifications or anything that my parents had from Ethiopia, specifically my dad, he had his own printing business. He wasn't able, this is really difficult to translate that when you come abroad, especially in the Western world. It almost doesn't qualify. They're not able to use that, their skill sets. They almost have to start from the beginning and build up again. So again, my parents couldn't continue in their career, which they had started. So I didn't, looking around, I didn't have a lot of motivations or like inspirations when it comes to career. However, it's like my parents put all the eggs in one basket when it came to me, and I'm the oldest child as well. So, you know, they would always remind me, you know, like, of course, the sacrifice they paid for me and my brother, but also to just drive me to focus on my studies. They made sure from the beginning that I knew I had my goals set and I was always focused on my future, that I wouldn't just derive from the path that they were carving for me.
What's it been like for you? Because I can't even imagine. I mean, I was born here. Yes, my roots are from other places, but I was born here. Mm. And that already is very, very confusing to me. Mm. How has it been for you?
I think it's definitely an interesting one. There are different factors, I would say, that have affected me and also built me up to be who I am today. Like, to begin with, for example, when I came to this country, in primary school, from the get-go, I experienced bullying because I didn't know how to speak English. I couldn't defend myself the way I want to. I was always misunderstanding what people were saying, which created this timid shyness in me. Like, it crushed my confidence to speak to my peers, to make friends, even to reach out to teachers. So it even without me realizing it, there was this confidence that was being crushed, and it kind of made me isolated to myself, which I have seen how that has like impacted me growing up as well, even all the way up into college, university, till this day, something I'm breaking out of. However, at the same time, all of these experiences, I had a way where I turned that into motivation. Like, it just helped me to drive forward, to be successful. Any setback I would have, I would almost fight back, in a sense that, you know, I don't want to just remain where I am right now. I want to push forward. I want to be successful. That was my way of retaliating almost. I would allow it to fuel me in the positive. And also, of course, my parents have always been an amazing support in my life. You know, there's such a love, and because, like I said, there's no extended family here for a very long time, so we kind of stuck with one another. We had a strong community, church community, and friends around us. Again, which really just allowed the love to flow through, which was another motivation. I didn't want to let them down again. That was another thing that really kept me going. And I guess another things that I did to keep me going was also, I loved sports growing up. That was my way of maybe, I guess, releasing my energy growing up. So I was a competitive swimmer for 6-7 years. Again, how that started was, I've never swam in Ethiopia. The first time I swam was when I came here, year 3. And I was almost experiencing pushback from students because, you know, how can I be at the age of 8 and not learn how to swim? It's very common here in the UK, right? In Ethiopia, it's not. So again, my mother had to take me extra lessons and extra classes. And I began to realize that I have such almost like a talent and a passion for swimming. And I took on from there and excelled in my swimming journey, which I carried for 6 or 7 years, going on to do competition. So again, that aspect of having competitive sport taught me discipline, which also translated into my studies and my friends and different aspects of my life. So yeah, I had different factors affecting me.
It's amazing because your story has parts of it that are really challenging. Just hearing about the bullying and what you've gone through to get up to speed with your peers. But the irony of it is that all of those challenges have actually made you way, way stronger than your peers.
Definitely, yeah.
Do you feel like, despite your enhanced strength and resilience because of the challenges you've faced, do you feel that you get what you deserve?
In terms of my education, or in terms of
Yeah, in terms of education, in terms of opportunities, whether that's job opportunities, like, you know, I guess the question put another way is, often minorities have to work that much more because we've got obstacles in front of us that maybe majorities don't have. Do you feel that having overcome many of those obstacles, you're given a fair chance?
I think, in my opinion, overall, just in the grand scheme of things, I don't think I've been given an equal chance. Simply because, like you said, as minorities, even without us realizing, we're having to work extra, like even more harder, extra hard, to achieve the basic requirements. And I think for me, when I realized that was this year, I applied for Undergraduate of the Year award with Target Jobs. And what they have 13 categories, and the one that I resonated with the most was excellence through adversity. And looking at the application, they wanted us to write a 500-word essay explaining what we have overcome, whether it be education in our lives, to get to where we are today and to excel in higher education. And I'll be honest with you, that was the first time where I have honestly sat down and fully reflected on the things that I have had to overcome to achieve higher education. And only when I did then, I started writing. I went all the way back to the age of 6 when my mom, you know, left Ethiopia and she came here. I started to meditate on why she did that. You know, the bullying that I experienced when I came here, the fact that I couldn't speak English, all of these things I had to almost observe all over again. The fact that I went to underprivileged areas and attended schools there, and the lack of mentoring that I experienced in those and guidance that I experienced in those schools, it led me to overload myself with, you know, 5 A levels, which got, you know, it resulted me in failing, getting kicked out of school because I failed my A levels. Even though I was such a driven person, because of the lack of mentoring, I almost had to guide myself. And because I failed, I had to go find another school all by myself. I didn't have anyone to help me. My school said, bye, there's nothing they can do. I almost had to pave the way again for myself. I didn't have mental guidance to tell me, no, keep going, don't, you know, push through, continue to study engineering, don't give up, because initially I wanted to do physics or engineering. So I almost had to drive myself to do that, if that makes sense. And looking back, you know, I realized for me, and I know a lot of minorities go through this as well, we almost have to work extra hard and we don't even realize it. It's almost like you're wired to do that subconsciously. You find yourself pushing all the more. Whereas if you went to, for example, you know, certain type of school, so you're from a specific background, you still have to work hard, but you're given these opportunities. It's handed to you. You're surrounded with families who have businesses or who are in a certain field or who understand the education system. My parents, for example, they did not understand or know that how the education system in the UK worked. And because of that, they simply were unable to advise me or mentor me as much as they could. So again, it fell on my lap. I had to almost, you know, guide myself, pick myself up and push. I had to do the extra work because I didn't have the opportunities placed. So to answer your question, I would say subconsciously, or, you know, we have to work harder and we do find ourselves working harder. Are we given what we deserve because of that? Again, there's setbacks. There's always setbacks. I mean, nowadays, a lot of companies are trying to, you know, this all-inclusive and diversity is, this topic is being, this awareness is being raised, for example. So it is benefiting quite a few of minorities, but even then, you still, the criteria, the stakes are still high. This is just the beginning of the ladder. We're still having to climb a long way. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, being in a minority group or couple of groups as a woman of color in engineering, I'm really aware of how hard we work to get fewer opportunities. Mm. But I'm also really aware of, you know, majorities who look like the majority, but are also not given opportunities because they don't come from the right socioeconomic classes and things like that. So I don't know. It's really tricky to know what the solution is. But out of all of that complexity and multi layers, one thing that I think will always get people through is hard work and determination and focus. Because if all else fails, you've put your all into it.
Yeah.
And I really hear that in you, that you really put your all into it. How did you get through those times when you failed your A-levels? I mean, why did you not just give up?
Yeah.
Cut your losses, you know?
Yeah. No, that's such a good question. And it's, you know, so easy when you've, you know, you face pushbacks and setbacks to just sit there, to not want to get up. It's, for me, it felt embarrassing because I was, again, the oldest child. After all my parents sacrificed, I even had moments where I paid for A-level exams externally and I still failed them. So I'm thinking, well, they paid for, my parents paid for my exam and I still failed it. So I was embarrassed. There's this sense of shame and just this feeling of failure that comes, that came upon me, for me, for example. However, I would say two things kept me going. Number one, ultimately, since I was young, even coming to this country, my faith in God played such a massive role. I'm a Christian. And genuinely, all in these moments of setbacks and when I couldn't keep pushing, even when everything just seemed bleak in the future, I always relied on my faith. I knew that whatever God has planned for me, it will prevail. It will happen. So I kept my faith close to me. And I knew that whatever I was going through would be turned into a testimony. I always had in this back of my mind that after every setback, it would make me laugh looking back. Even when I fail my exams, I'd always think, I would retake this exam. I'm going to be successful and I'm going to use this as a testimony to help someone else. I always had that picture in my head. My failure is going to be used as a testimony to help somebody else, another younger person. So I allowed that to fuel me. That's something that kept me going. And another thing was, like I mentioned earlier, every setback, I just allow it to fuel me. I don't just want to, you know, sit back and stay there. I really wanted to be a scientist growing up, especially as a woman, person of color. I saw the lack of representatives, especially in the space industry, or even aerospace industry. So I just wanted to be a pioneer. I wanted to push forward, do something nobody has ever done. So every time I would fail, I would use it as an opportunity. It was almost like I got to a point where I'd be excited when I would fail, because that comeback is going to be stronger and then that's going to inspire someone else. And there was this domino effect that was going to take place. So, yeah, I just had that clear picture in my mind and I knew that I just couldn't sit back and just let this happen. Yeah.
Yeah, like I think there's so much to learn from failure. And actually, the most effective learning is when things go wrong, because it really forces you to ask yourself, why did this go wrong? And you are reminding me of my GCSE mocks, where I was predicted like a D in maths or something. And I remember just, I was like, I work so hard. Like, I just do so much work. Why am I predicted a D? And then I realized, like, I was, because I knew I wasn't very good at maths. And so I went to WH Smith, the bookshop, and I bought like 3 or 4 additional textbooks. So I had the textbook from school where we had homework from there, but I also had like 3 or 4 additional maths textbooks. And I was doing all of this additional work and I was never ever checking my answers. So spending hours and hours and hours doing everything wrong. So I was doing all the hard work, like I was putting in the time, I was, you know, devoted. It was in that moment that I realized that actually it's not about working hard, it's also about working smart.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those, if I had been beaten down with the idea that I was predicted a D, and if I'd used that to demotivate myself, I wouldn't be where I am today. I ended up getting an A in maths. It was because I was like, how can someone work? So I asked myself, how can someone work so hard and still get a D? And it forced me to like look at everything. And I was like, oh, because I'm not checking my answers.
Yeah.
You know, even if I did one example right, it's better than doing five examples wrong, you know? So I love this attitude you have of like learning from things that don't quite go to plan and trusting that there is actually a greater plan at the end of it all. So you wanted to go into sort of space science. You ended up in aerospace engineering.
Yeah.
So what is the difference between science and engineering when it comes to space?
See, that's also a good question. I think when I wanted to go into space, I wanted to do a degree in physics with astronomy, for example, because I was mainly interested in the, you know, more space science aspect, but you don't have astronomy degree by itself. It's usually associated with physics. And that would usually lead to more of the research field going forward. And, you know, I had to stop and look at my personality as well. I love working with people. I love hands-on stuff, working with people, rolling up my sleeve and just getting stuck in. So, you know, that's something engineering really allows you to do. Yes, you are putting the theory onto paper. However, you're also being practical. You get to do simulations. You get to design. You get to do more manufacturing, hands-on stuff in the career that you are also interested in. So I think that's something aerospace engineering really allowed me to delve into. Even in my degree, for example, I partook in, I think, three or four projects with the IMECI, with the IMECI challenge, where we had to, for example, make a line launcher. And that involved us designing it, having to look at different materials to put together. How are we actually going to bring this theory into life? And, you know, you get to work as a team and as a group, which I also love. Whereas the research-based field, it's more by yourself and more individual. Yeah, it's more of an individual research route, which, you know, it does entice some people. But for me, I think I love the reality and more of the involvement that you have when it comes to engineering. And aerospace, you know, allowed me to focus on the engineering field, but of course, looking at aircraft developments and designs and even spacecraft, it can even allow me to get into rockets, for example, and how they're developed and operation behind that, which, you know, it just opens a lot of opportunities. And how many girls do you know actually do this? And I know a lot of young people find this exciting as well. And I think if they see representatives, someone that they can relate to in that field, my goodness, like it can fully inspire them so much.
So I'm picturing you when you're talking about simulations and design and building and testing and yeah, all of those things. I'm picturing you doing your job, being in industry. How have you coped with looking around you and not seeing anyone that looks like you? Like, how do you remain empowered and confident in your own skin when you're unconventional?
Yeah, that is a really good question. I think even you can probably relate with this as well. But when you come to an engineering company, or when you're looking, especially, it doesn't have to be the big companies, even the smaller engineering firms, you will see only a handful of women, let alone colored people of color. And I think for me, I've almost prepared myself going into this degree. Like, it's something I was aware of. For example, when I went to college right before my university, there was only two girls, including myself. And I was the only person of color who's a woman in that class. And that kind of put everything to perspective for me. You know, I knew what I was getting myself into. But again, I let that fuel me. Of course, it's such a shame that that's the case. But I love just breaking boundaries and just pushing forward. I love doing something that people haven't really done in order to open the door for other people. You know, I love just facing challenges and going straight at it, and just almost pioneering for the generations behind me as well, which my degree has really helped with. Of course, there were instances where working in a group project, especially at university, you see how you are treated. Like for me, there were times where I felt really timid, where I felt like it wasn't my place to speak up, or I didn't feel like I was allowed to speak up or heard. I wasn't listened to, which really challenges you. And another thing I was experiencing this year, and I know a lot of people can have experienced it, is imposter syndrome. Going into engineering, yeah, you really feel that imposter syndrome, almost feeling like you're not supposed to be here. You're out of place. This is not where you belong. But again, in order to push for changes, it's going to be hard at first, but once you pick up momentum, I think what I've noticed is people around you start to trust you. You're almost teaching other people as you go along. Even the guys, for example, in my uni, I was almost helping them to break down stereotypes that they may have had in their minds. But yeah, but that really initially took me. I had to almost convince myself to keep pushing, keep going, because I knew what I was doing was very significant.
Mm. But, you know, in the beginning, you said that you felt like you were shrinking and shrinking because of not speaking the language and the bullying. And now you sound like you are absolutely on the other side of the spectrum, where you're almost thriving on being different. Like, when was the switch?
Yeah. I think for me, getting into aerospace engineering was a massive confident boost for me. Mm-hmm. Because considering that, you know, failing A-levels basically meant I wasn't able to progress into university. But I realized when I would push and push, you know, I went to college. I did an engineering like a short course for 1 year, almost like a foundation year, but in college. And I needed 10 distinction stars in order to make it into university. And that's the exact grade that I got. I got 10 distinction stars. And I was only, you know, a handful of the people who managed to get it in that class, me being the only girl who managed to achieve it. So these little steps ended up boosting my confidence. Coming into aerospace engineering, you know, excelling through first year and second year, achieving high grades as well. I guess my grades kind of gave me the confidence to realize, see, what they can do, I can also do. And even working, you know, coming into Brunel, the on-campus third year, I realized that I was volunteering with Brunel Formula student team. And when I was hands-on, the work that I was producing, what other people even testified was that, you know, they were quite impressed as well with the work that I was producing. It can be a little task when assembling or cleaning certain tools and equipment, or, sanding or soldering, whatever it may be. I did it to the best of my ability. And I realized, oh, okay, when it comes to hands-on stuff, I'm able to excel and really stand out almost. So I identified that skill set in myself, which gave me another boost, another confidence. So I think as I walked through this journey and as I was achieving things, overcoming things, it was almost proving to myself, see, I can do it. Sometimes we can be our own biggest enemies. Like I used to always say that. It's all in the mindset. So I think when you're proving yourself, even this year, for example, I came top 10 in the undergraduate of the year award. Mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. There's so many thousands of applicants. So even things, achievements like this helped me to just have more confidence to almost realize, see, I can do it. It is possible to do it. I almost needed to prove myself for me. But yeah, I think as I was walking this journey, these accomplishments did boost me.
On an actual practical level, was there something you literally did differently to go from failing A-levels to getting distinctions?
Yeah, it was quite a journey, I'm not going to lie. I failed A-levels, I failed my AS, and then I failed my A2. Then I took a gap year. I said, I don't want to give up my education, but I need a break. I just need to stop and really understand what's going on. I took a break. And I think what I've noticed with, for me, you know how you said for you, it was that you wasn't looking at the answers when you were doing your GCSEs. For me, I was so driven, passionate from morning to evening. All I was thinking about is my education, what to study. I would make plans. I was very optimistic. If I would fail, I would come back. I would want to push through. But my problem was I didn't have a good study system. I would procrastinate a lot. As much as I didn't want to, I would procrastinate. And the courses that I did, for the subjects I took for A-level, were physics, maths, chemistry. But they were very hard. You know, you can't. There's no denying that. And because the workload kept increasing, the stress increased, I just subconsciously would run away from that. I would ease just that stress for a moment. So that led to procrastination. Things kept adding up. They kept adding up. And I didn't know how to tackle it. And another thing I would say that was not in my favor, a personality trait, that a character trait I had to change, was I almost didn't like being helped. I wanted to do things by myself. My parents would always offer, okay, let's get a tutor. They can help you for maths, for physics. They were willing to pay for it and get me tutor as however long I needed. But I refused because I couldn't grasp my mind around how someone else can help me understand if I'm not understanding it initially by myself, which doesn't really make sense. And I know there are a lot of people like this that I have personally met. I would sit in class, and if I zone out, instead of asking questions and coming after class to speak to the teacher, I'll tell myself, no, when I go home, I'll do all over again. And I would give myself a lot of work to do. It was very unrealistic. And all these practical steps were almost a setback for me. I isolated myself and gave myself a massive workload that I couldn't achieve. You know, so, and then it was a repetitive, it was a cycle. And that had to break. So when I took my gap year and I went to college, first of all, the workload was slightly easier than how it was in A-level. You know, I knew my limit. I knew I was a bit more realistic during that year. I would ask my teachers for help. I would ask people for help if I didn't understand something. I made sure that things didn't pile up. And I know it's not easy for, you know, to stop procrastinating, but I knew this was something I had to do from the beginning to make sure the workload didn't pile up on me. So yeah, it was something I tackled. And even during my university, again, I'm tackling it. It doesn't just go away. But I think the most important thing was I understood where I was going wrong. And then I was able to tackle that.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of all of that, you've got this amazing self-awareness.
Yeah, literally.
And so powerful. So what's on the horizon for you? Like, what are your next steps now that you've just finished your degree?
Yeah, it's actually really exciting. I think I've not been this excited since a while. But yeah, I finished my third year of aerospace. So I'm currently doing my summer internship at Kane International. I had a mentor during third year. Again, my first time getting a mentor was third year, which I really recommend for young students going to university, especially young women going to university. From the beginning, really seek out mentors. You need that guidance throughout your education. So for me, Jonathan Hall was, you know, he mentored me throughout this year, and he's a director at Kane. So he gave me this opportunity to come and have a summer internship here. And after this, because like I mentioned, I applied for the Undergraduate of the Year Award with Rolls-Royce being the sponsoring company. They gave me a summer internship as well for starting end of July until end of September. And I have another experience with Motorola as well, because I won Mentor of the Year with my mentoring program at university, whom, you know, Sam Middlewood was my mentor. So I have a few work experiences coming up, which I'm so excited to start. And I'm also thinking to do my master's in aerospace engineering, my MEng, this year. So apparently I've not had enough of education. I'm going to go back. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I want to get stuck into the formula student at my university and really gain as much experience as I can, even in the field of motorsport. I want to expose myself in that area as well and not limit myself, honestly. But yeah.
Amazing. And it's also such a coincidence because I know that your mentor there at Kane is a classmate of mine.
Exactly.
It's just such a lovely family. And also, you know, I'm really happy to hear that you are thinking about motorsport, because that is a severely underrepresented industry, also a very exciting one, very competitive.
Yeah.
And I think you could absolutely thrive in an industry like that, because they are crying out for engineering talent that's female. So, you know.
Definitely. Yeah.
Exciting time for you, because what you have that I didn't have 2 decades ago is like just a really strong awareness of your future, your path, you know, to learn that you are not great at asking for help and then to ask for help. I mean, it's just so mature and so smart, the way you're thinking and approaching and tackling things. I don't know who's inspiring who, like, here, because it's just really, it fills me with hope that you are thinking this way. I'm so, like, excited to see you continue and, like, blossom. And, like, at this stage now, would you recommend that women go into engineering? Because I'll let you into a kind of confession. There was a time when I was promoting women into STEM, particularly engineering, and I felt bad doing that, because I was like, why am I encouraging women to go into a profession that doesn't support them? Where are you at? Because you're actually immersed in industry. Like, do you think it is an industry for women?
100%. It's an industry for anyone. Like, this is a good question, because it's from the get-go, from the beginning, we have to break that barrier. It is an industry for women. And a lot of people need to stop differentiating that as if the engineering industry belongs to men and more of the, you know, the English and the different sectors belong to women. No, I think, as long as you've done your degree, yeah, you're passionate about it, you're passionate about engineering, you know, you don't even have to be incredibly passionate and know what you want to do at such a young age. For me, for example, I'm going to different experiences to learn, to see, to understand exactly where I want to be. So I think it's okay to even allow yourself just space to grow and to experience different things. But engineering, definitely, as long as you're interested in it, you do a degree in or an apprenticeship in an engineering sector field, there's nothing that's stopping you. Like, for women, there's absolutely nothing. There's literally no limitation. And of course, it's going to be a push. You know, there aren't a lot of representatives for women in this industry, but that should motivate us to push forward. That should be the fuel, almost. It's exciting. Be the change that you really want to see. And I'm prepared for that, for example. Like, I'm prepared to be the only person of color or woman in a team or in a specific company. I'm ready for that. And that shouldn't be something where we're shameful of or ashamed of. No, use that to, I want people to just have this desire to be pioneers, to really be the first or the first set of people to achieve something, to not shy away from it, to really run towards the challenge. Because a lot of time it's in our mind, it's really in the mind where we allow the setback to happen. Like, we fail in our mind before we even start. And I think that's where the danger is. But yeah, engineering 100% is a woman can do it, a girl can do it. So I do encourage everyone to pursue it. Yeah.
Well, Yulia, you've said so many inspiring things. And honestly, just seeing you there and really absorbing your determination and your inner confidence, which is not arrogant in any way, it's just such a humble confidence, is the most inspiring of all. I wish you so well, you know, along your career. And I must say, like, through everything I've heard of you today, there's a kind of theme that I've recently sort of coined, which is making a difference through our differences. And you are such an amazing example of that. Like, being different, like, you are going to change the landscape.
Exactly.
So thank you. Thank you so much for being so honest and transparent and sharing your experiences so far in engineering with us.
No worries. Thank you so much, even for having me and everything that you're achieving as well. Honestly, you don't know how many people you've honestly inspired just through your journey.
Nothing.
Yeah, I think so, maybe. It could be. Big up, Bruno.
Yeah, big up, Bruno.
Thanks for listening, and please do subscribe to this podcast and maybe even rate and review it if you can. The more ratings and reviews, then the more interest from those trusty algorithms, which could help to increase the reach of this show. And you can watch the video recording of this conversation on YouTube for my new series called Esteemed Women. It's all about self-discovery and self-evolution on innovation. So as always, be kind and loving to yourselves, and I wish you all a great week.